What's up, guys? Saf here on Super Saf Speaks, and welcome to episode number 31, I believe it is, of the podcast with your host, Super Saf, and co-host
Thunder E from Board at Work. We're back again.
We are back. So we promised we'd be back with monthly episodes. We had one for the start of the year 2024, and that's now we have one for the month of February. So, you know, we did promise we're going to be back. I know a lot of people are disappointed after we took a long break, but I think this is going to be a lot more achievable for us, right? Once a month.
Yes, once a month, I think, would be achievable, and makes a lot of sense in general, because weekly is going to be rough. It's too much stuff to do.
There's just too much stuff. And, you know, that's something that we're going to be talking about a little bit later in the podcast as well. So today we're going to be talking about the Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra, which we've been using for a couple of weeks now. So we've got lots of thoughts. We've got the OnePlus 12, which has kind of been overshadowed, I would say, by the S24 Ultra. But it's a tremendous device. So we're going to be talking about that too. Mm-hmm. Apple Vision Pro. Pre-orders have gone through. Enabong is balling, so he has actually put a pre-order in. It's going to be coming soon. So let's talk a little bit about that, because there's some early thoughts. And finally, we're going to be talking about YouTubers quitting, because there have been a few YouTubers recently. Tom Scott, to be one of the prominent ones, who's also a good friend, has we've got YouTubers who have either quit or, you know, drastically cut back on making content on YouTube. So that's something that's almost become a bit of a talking topic, and, you know, a trend, shall we say, more recently. So being YouTubers that myself and E are, we can talk about this with lots of experience.
Yes, definitely. Where do we start? S24 Ultra, right?
The Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. So I have to say straight away, for me, phone of the year already. And I know.
Wow. Look, I'm going to speak into the microphone again. Wow.
Look, I know it's early and people are thinking, how could it be phone of the year when it's just January? But we've had lots of smartphones out this year already, right? But
yeah.
I do like it. Now, what about you? The first impression. I've said phone of the year. What's your reaction?
It's almost phone of the year. How about that?
Almost phone of the year. Okay. All right. So yeah, we'll get into that. So the first thing I want to talk about is the design, right? So it looks exactly the same as the S23 Ultra, which looked exactly the same as the S22 Ultra. Now, I think, you know, I've been seeing this a lot in the comments. I'm not hugely bothered about it because I still think it's a really good design. I think the biggest change here is that we've got titanium, right? So Apple had titanium for the iPhone 15 Pro Max. Now we've got it for the S24 Ultra. I like it. I like the matte finish because previously it was glossy. But using this over the past couple of weeks, the one thing that, you know, is kind of a thought that I have is that, fair enough, it's titanium. It looks nicer. It's supposed to be more durable. I'm not going to drop it. But it's not any lighter because we've gone from aluminium to titanium. Now, on the iPhone, we went from stainless steel to titanium. So the weight difference was something that was noticeable. On the S24 Ultra, it's like 1 or 2 grams.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel the S23 Ultra is lighter. Or maybe because it's not as thick. Because if you notice with the design of the S24 Ultra, the sides
are slightly thicker,
yeah, on the device. But I think even though titanium might be the biggest change, I think the biggest change is the flat display. You really notice it. You really notice it when you're using the device and how good it is. Even though I was one of the proponents who loved curved displays.
So, you know, you must have seen the clip from the previous podcast episode, and Enabong did say that he prefers curved displays. And I was like, no, for me, it's, you know, I think curved displays look better, but flat displays are more practical. And we've got symmetrical bezels as well, which I think, you know, a lot of these aspects go towards it. So I think we're definitely team flat display now. Would we agree on that?
Yes.
Welcome change. I think there's a small minority of people who think like, oh no, why hasn't it got a curved display? But I think especially when you're using with the S Pen and stuff, it doesn't kind of just, you know, fall off the edges. I think it's a good shout from Samsung for going with the flat display. I think it definitely works. But let's talk about this display, because it's brighter, which I absolutely love, right? It's still one of the best displays out there. But the key thing is that it's using Gorilla Armor. I was going to say Gorilla Glass Armor, but the official timer is Gorilla Armor. Now, this is supposed to be more scratch resistant. I'm not going to test that. My S23 Ultra, loads of scratches because I didn't use screen protector. Oof. The S24 Ultra, It has Gorilla Armor, which is supposed to be more scratch resistant, but also reduces reflections. And this is very noticeable. So when you put this up against pretty much any other phone out there, whether it's direct sunlight or a direct source of light, you're going to notice that it's way less reflective. And that's actually much better, you know, for that viewing experience. Now, having said that, one thing that I did notice straight away, because I just came straight from the S23 Ultra, was that it's not as vibrant. It's not got that same saturation level. Now, I asked you, and you were like, no, it looks the same to me. And I was like, okay, you know what? Let me actually talk to somebody who might know a thing or two about displays.
That is not true.
No, so I messaged Tom, and then I also messaged Samsung, and they said, yes, it is not as vibrant. And that seems to be a byproduct of being less reflective.
Yes, yes. So to my defense, Saf sent me a message. I woke up in the morning. It was, you know, me waking up. I took a look at it and I was like, it looks fine. So it was a little hazy eyes, but yeah. The one thing to mention is once you put a screen protector on the display, that nullifies that reflectiveness completely.
Okay, so here's the thing about the screen protector. So this is something I mentioned, right? If you put a normal screen protector on, guess what it's going to do? You're no longer going to have the anti-reflective properties because now you've got a layer in front of it, right? So yeah. This anti-reflective property that you have on the Gorilla Armor, if you put a normal screen protector, it's going to take that away and then it's going to actually look a bit more vibrant because now it's a bit more glossy, right? So that's what it seems like. Now, this is something that a lot of people were asking me that, oh, so if I put a screen protector on, it's going to go. However, Samsung do have some anti-reflective screen protectors. So if you still want to keep that anti-reflectiveness, right, then and you want to use a screen protector, then you want to go for an anti-reflective screen protector. If you use a regular screen protector, which we're doing right now, you're going to lose the anti-reflectiveness.
Yeah, but I think it also goes to play on the idea of what vibrancy is. If a screen protector can take away that, then it just is all about how you are reacting to the way light shines on that display. Now, I'm not saying that it's good or bad. I think, you know, Samsung was trying to offer something that, you know, especially when people are using these devices outdoors, you know, in daylight, that they could actually see the display without reflections and things like that. So for me, it's fine because I also had the same complaints on my videos on the new Samsung TVs, the new OLED TVs that have a new reflective coating, and people are like, it's not going to be as vibrant. And I'm like, yes, but it's not going to change the image quality and the color volume of it. It's just that you're seeing it now differently instead of, you know,
It's also what our eyes are used to with every other screen, right? So like every other smartphone screen that we have, we're used to seeing that now. So it's a bit of a change. But if you ask me right now, okay, so you get, which has those anti-reflective properties, slightly less vibrant, right? Or would you go for something that is reflective and, you know, doesn't have those properties? And I'll be like, you know what? I'll actually go with Gorilla Armor because it's a compromise I'm willing to make for that anti-reflectiveness. Although right now I've got a screen protector on mine because after the I scratched up the S23 Ultra, I'm like, yeah, I probably don't want to do that with this. So, you know, shout out to Spigen who sent out some screen protectors. So we've got them on there. I will try some anti-reflective ones as well to kind of see what that effect is. But nevertheless, beautiful display, right? And all the right things that we have seen on it, right? Now, one thing that I want to touch on are the cameras, because this has been somewhat of a controversial topic. So let me just say that the S24 Ultra, amazing cameras overall, right? Great for photos and videos. I'm definitely for the 5x zoom camera, the 5x zoom camera, which has a high resolution. So it's not the 10x camera that we had on the S23 Ultra, but guess what? It still does really good at those extended zoom ranges because it's got a higher megapixel sensor. So I still really like it, right? What are your thoughts on the cameras so far?
I've got some mixed feelings on the camera. Okay. It's not bad, but just mixed. So I think, you know, when you look at it from my skin complexion, because I did my whole video on that, is it's the best phone for black. It's the second best phone for black people besides the Pixel, which does a better job at darker skin tones. Yeah. So I appreciate that aspect of it. The 5X looks really good. You know, I would say compared to the iPhone, it's comparable. Some situations slightly better, especially on my skin tone. caveat there. I understand what Samsung said, that, you know, a lot of people don't use the 10X, because I actually went back to look at how much 10X photos I took. Not that much. So I can see why, you know, they made that. But I mean, you know, people like us, we still do take photos like that in general. My own thing is, whenever it switches to 10X, they have this very funky haze over the image itself. I can't describe it properly. It's almost like a blue tint.
You need to wipe the
which
lens. I'm joking. I'm joking. Sorry.
Yeah. Continue. No, it's right. So I think that's a software thing. I think that's a software thing that will happen. And I think some of the HDR issues that some people have noted can be fixed via software. My thing is more of how the imbalance of the skin tone is, especially someone who's much lighter than me, a white person compared to me. It's very jarring. Just looking at some of Tom's photos, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. And how it makes him look. So I think there is some fine tuning that needs to happen, but I think the image quality is still really good. The one thing I will mention is, Samsung, please, your 24 megapixel option, which is only on pro mode, make that the standard.
Like what Apple do right now with their primary camera. Shoot as standard at 24 megapixels, you get more detail. Yeah.
Yeah, so much more detail. I know, yes, they're combining the 50 and 12 to get that, but it looks really good. And maybe it's just the processing might be a little longer, but it didn't seem like that to me when I took a photo. So just make it a standard and call it a day.
It seems like the main reason why Samsung went for the 5x zoom is because the range between 5 up until 10x, right, was not great on the S23 Ultra, because as soon as you got to, say, around 8x, then you're using the 3x, and then you're using everything else is just digital after that, right? And then when you compare it to something like the iPhone or the Pixel, which both have 5x zoom cameras, it's just not as good. So I think that the fact that they've gone for this, I think, is definitely the right move. Now, one thing I want to touch on is the software, right? Because one of the things that I got so many comments on, because there was a rumor that there was going to be a software update before release, which didn't come, by the way, haha. But there was like all of these comments about, why don't you wait till the update? And I'm like, what update? I'm sorry, but we haven't been told to hold back testing, right? We've been told to test, and we can only test what's in front of us, right? Okay. Now, if there was an update that was supposed to be coming, then, you know, that's when we should have got the devices, right? Because even if somebody's like, oh, the embargo is at a later time, you can test it, you've got the phone right now, you're still going to be testing it. So the only time you can properly test it, if there was this update, for example, is after that update. But then we've got the devices before that, so we can only test what we've got, right? And there was this whole like big debate online saying, oh, you YouTubers doing it for views and stuff like that. And it's just like, wait, hold on. Like, we've been given the devices, we need to test it. We're not going to wait 2 months and then do the test when everybody's already bought the phone, right?
Oh,
people
are
pre-ordering the phone. They want to know the reactions of what we do and what, you know, what our job is, essentially, to test these phones as we are provided for them. If they are not ready, then they shouldn't be given to us, right? To review us, to review. Simple as.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I think the only time that we can give that kind of grace is, you know, say there's a 2-week period before we get the device and we get it on Monday today. And, you know, the review embargo is 2 weeks from now. And Samsung says, hey, guys, could you just wait till Wednesday? There's an update. Sure. I can wait till Wednesday. It's 2 days.
Yeah.
I can give them that time so I can get the update and like, hey, this is the final update. Makes sense. But when you're not told anything in that kind of manner, plus you guys, some people just don't understand how long it takes. I don't do camera comparison because I know how long it takes you, it takes Danny forever to just take the photos, videos, and then compile them together, which is why I just kind of stay away from that. It's a lot of work. You know,
I'd say it's the most difficult video still to do. You know, I've been doing them for over 10 years now, and they are still the most difficult videos to do, but they're also the most rewarding, because that's what people come to my channel. You know, a lot of people come to my channel because I'm the camera comparison guy. But yeah, I just wanted to kind of highlight that look, we can only test what's given to us, right? Okay. And based on my testing, this is the thing though, my reaction was, I actually said the cameras were really good, because I really do like the S24 Ultra cameras. I think there's certain areas that can be improved. And I think a lot of people were looking at my camera comparison because I started with cinematic mode. Now, you know this as well. iPhone does cinematic mode better than pretty much, you know, everything else out there. So they're taking that and they're like running with it and they're like, oh, the Samsung cameras are not good. It's like, but it's a 20-minute video. You watch the first 15 seconds. Yeah. Watch everything else, because there are certain situations where the S24 Ultra actually does better and has improved massively. And I'd say in video in particular, it's improved quite a bit. You've got some really good quality video, and especially with dynamic range, I think it was really going toe-to-toe with the iPhone, which I think is, you know, like a big prop to Samsung for actually improving the cameras on that side of things, right? So yes, there were certain areas where it wasn't as good as the iPhone, but there were certain areas where it was better. So I think, you know, if you ask me right now, cameras, I'd still say very, very good overall. They're only going to get better with software updates, right? Whenever they do come. But that's my sort of thoughts on the camera so far.
I agree with you. I think the other thing people don't realize, and maybe because a lot of, you know, your camera videos are long, there's also many things to cover, is this camera is more feature packed than you imagine. There's a 4K 120. You can now record 4K 60 on all devices. You also have that AI camera zoom thing. I forgot what it's called again specifically, that can record two different points at the same time. You can record with the front and the back cameras at the same time and have it as two separate files, not, you know, not the same. So if you're vlogging, this is great, you know, because you can walk around, talk about a scene in front of you while you're still capturing yourself. So there's a lot of features in the camera. I think the one thing that I want to see Samsung do is simplify some of those features. You know, 4K 120 should be on the main, you know, just in the main camera rather than going to the pro mode, just because it's there. Things like that, where they can easily move things around in the software so it's more accessible to people, because I think a lot of people don't realize that this is a very feature-packed camera, as well as also a very good camera in total.
100%. And then, you know, speaking of features and AI you mentioned, I mean, this is, you know, Samsung are calling it the AI phone. And there were lots of really cool AI features, like on the imaging side of things, just being able to edit after the fact, right? Maybe not something you're going to use all the time, but you can always go in. If you've got a friend like I do, like E, who always takes pictures a little bit off angle, you can sort that out later. When we were in Vegas that time, if we had the S24 Ultra, we wouldn't have had to take 300 shots just to get a straight shot.
Look, to my defense, right? Okay, there's no defense. Seriously.
There's no defense. There is no defense. But I mean, there are some really cool AI features. But on the topic of AI features, the one thing that a lot of people, well, I didn't initially notice, but then it was in the small print and, you know, everybody was talking about it afterwards, is that these features, firstly, should be coming to the S23 Ultra as well. In the coming months, some of them at least, or if not most, and they are only going to be free up until the end of 2025, after which we don't know. There might be a monthly charge for some of these AI features, there might be one-off charge, I don't know. We don't know yet. Samsung hasn't said anything. Would you pay for these features going forward? That's the question.
Yes, maybe not all the features pertain to me. But I think a lot of people first have to go away from, I think we need to slowly back away from the freemium model that we've had for, you know, years, you know, and people have to understand Samsung isn't making the AI backbone for this. You know, this is something that Google has with its Gemini as well, right? So again, you know, this is something where that partnership with Google and Samsung has brought this forward. We don't know, they don't know where that partnership is going to land. So I'm glad at least it's somewhere there saying, hey, look, it might go away, or it might be something where you have to update, because maybe this version of AI just doesn't work as well. So I get that. But I think in terms of features, yes, I would pay for
how
some
much,
of them.
How much would you pay? Like say it was all of the features, right? So you want to carry on using all of the AI features. What's the monthly charge that you would be willing to pay?
I would raise the price by $50, the phone. Don't do a monthly charge. Just raise the price.
Well, they have already raised the price by $100.
Yeah. Okay, there you go.
But monthly, no, but remember, say for example, okay, you've got your S24 Ultra.
$299 a month.
$299 a month. I think that's reasonable.
Yeah.
$299 a month.
Yeah, $299 if it's just this feature set. But if there's something bigger and more robust, then maybe $599. Maybe if it's a proper AI assistant that does other things.
Because the other thing as well is with these is that you want them to improve. You want these features to get better. So you're not just paying for. So you know, if you've got a monthly subscription, they can reinvest in making these features better and maintaining them and improving them. Right? Maybe adding more languages, etc. So maybe I'd say, yeah, I think $299 Samsung, if you're watching and listening, you know, that's the kind of price that we would be willing to pay. But having said that, okay, AI features, very cool. like especially, you know, like the chat assistant and, you know, the translation, live translation when you're making phone calls. Mm-hmm. Like the thing is though, here's my thing, right? How often are people going to use those? Now, if you're somebody who travels, okay, or you speak to somebody, maybe somebody's trying to find a wife that doesn't speak the same language as them, right? Okay. Maybe Singala, Colonel Singala, wants yes. to have a variety, right, of wives. So then he's speaking to different ones. Then for somebody like that, yes, I'm joking, by the way. But, you know, for somebody who is traveling a lot, somebody who's speaking to somebody, you know, or trying to learn the language, brilliant, okay? On your day-to-day, I don't think I'll be using those features very often. And this is where the question comes in that, you know, how, I mean, they're very cool features, and especially like to show them off, they're like, wow, like I've shown them to people and they were like, this is amazing. But it's like, okay, when it comes to practicality, how often do you use them?
I think yeah, you're right. They're, those features, some of those features are not. I think the photo editing and generative AI ones will be used more, especially mm-hmm. you just cropping out people, and that's something that I think will be a day-to-day. You take a shot and you remember, oh, you know what? Don't worry, it's fine. We're good. I can take that person out, or I can make us look cooler or do something else with it. I also think stuff like the note-taking transcribe feature with AI, that I think a lot of people will use. People who are at least who take a lot of notes. My buddy, you know him, Sam. He's doing a master's program, and he just got the S24 Ultra, and he's like, man, you know, this is great in class because I can
record.
Record. And done. Amazing. I don't have to do anything else. Mm. So those kind of things will happen. I think it's just a matter of, I think people have to be patient with AI on devices to find the right kind of features that work for them. There are going to be a lot of features that have been thrown out. And to be fair, all these features are very useful. They're not useful all the time.
Yes.
And I think that's just this is the difference from being a gimmick where like, oh, this is fun. No. You would definitely use this. I remember, you know, the call feature, I was talking to Samsung, and I said, when I went to Korea with you guys, we had to go to a restaurant that you had to call to book. Mm. And yet, you had to do it in Korea. I had to use a service online to book the restaurant. And I'm like, I could easily just called and just done this. Mm. No questions asked.
Well, it's interesting. Let's see what happens with these AI features and how much we use them going forward. One great thing is the software. You know, Samsung has promised 7 years of software, seven generations of OS updates and 7 years of security updates, which is brings it in line with Google. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Battery life has been great, a little bit better than my S23 Ultra, and performance as well. We've got the 8 Gen 3.
Oh, 8 Gen 3 is a beast of a chip. Yeah. I mean, some of the benchmark numbers I've seen from, you know, mine are close to the iPhone 15 Pro Max. Some are better depending on what benchmarks you run. So for me, this brings in the question because I've been playing a lot of, you know, console level games on the iPhone, and I'm going, Samsung, Android, whoever, you guys can do it. Your processors are pretty much benching the same. So I need to see some of that.
But performance, again, has been top-notch. You've got no worries in terms of performance. And price. Now, look, they've increased the price in the US by $100, right? UK is the same. But some of the pre-order deals have been mad. So, you know, shout out affiliate link. You can get $150 in free Samsung credit. You can get double the storage. So you can get the 512 gigabyte version for the 256 gigabyte version price. And on top of that, there's boosted trade-ins as well. So in my comparison of the S24 Ultra versus the S23 Ultra, I kind of said, obviously, you don't need to upgrade. If you've got the S23 Ultra, you don't need to upgrade. You don't need to get the S24 Ultra. However, I kind of broke it down with all of the discounts. So I said, if you use your student discount, okay, you get 10% off. Then you get the Samsung credit, which you can use towards other things. I mean, fair enough, it's not money off, but you know, you consider that discount that you've got there as well. Then you consider the double storage, right? Then you consider the trade-in. So if you've got the S23 Ultra, you trade it in, you get $750. If you count all of those discounts, you'll be paying the equivalent of $270. Or if you're not a student or you don't know a student, right? You'll be paying up to $400. Now that, as an upgrade, is like, wow, that is... If you consider all of those pre-order deals, which I'm not sure how long they're going to last, right? Then it's kind of like makes it a lot more compelling. Even in the UK, you had double the storage, but as well as that, you had, I think right now they've got £100 off, but you got the Galaxy Watch with for free. Again, you got accelerated trade-ins, like amplified trade-ins and stuff like that. And again, when you consider all of that, like, you know, one of my friends, Richard, he was just like, oh, I need to, like, shall I just trade in my S23 Ultra because it's going to cost me 300, I don't know, like a few hundred pounds, like 400 something pounds. Like, should I do it? And I was like, dude, it's up to you. You don't need to do it, but the deals are pretty good right now.
Oh, yeah, it is. Quick note, though. Anyone can get that student discount. You just have to click it. That's it. Samsung's website. Pretty much.
Hack. You don't need to prove that you're a student. We're not. Yeah. Like, I've got nothing to do with this. Okay.
But you're right. Those deals are great. I think on average, what I've seen from a lot of my subscribers is a lot of people are like, yeah, I paid like $800 for the device. You know, because yes, they didn't trade in like, you know, a brand new phone or a phone from last year, but they got like 800 off plus, you know, upgraded memory and also getting the free smartwatch as well. So there is a lot to that price point deal that Samsung does. Samsung plays the margins really well, especially when they want to, that allows people to upgrade quite effectively.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall S24 Ultra recommendation, I'd say, yeah, brilliant phone. If you're considering it, do check it out. We'll be covering it more extensively going forward anyway, as we do on our channels. But if you ask us, when you ask me, I'd say it's phone of the year.
Almost. Yeah, it is almost, at least for me. Yeah, we'll hold on to that. But I would just want to add the S24 line this year, the Plus, the regular, I think also have got a really good upgrades just in terms of just full feature sets, at least with the Snapdragon HN3 versions here in the US. I don't know about the Exynos versions. That's a whole.
Well, this is the thing. Discussion. That's a test that we're going to have to do, because in the UK and other regions, for the S24 and the S24 Plus, there is the Exynos 2400, whereas in the US and other regions, it's HN3. Whereas the S24 Ultra is consistent across the board, which is another, you know, good reason to go for the S24 Ultra. It is the one chip across the board.
Yeah.
OnePlus 12. This is an amazing smartphone, but I think it has been overshadowed by the S24 Ultra. And I've seen a lot of people, including you, E, that have compared it to the S24 Ultra. And I think that's an unfair comparison, because the OnePlus 12 is actually priced around £400 or $500 less compared to the S24 Ultra. It starts at $800 or £849, which kind of brings it more in line with the Samsung Galaxy S24 standard version, not even the S24 Plus, because it's $200 less compared to the S24 Plus, right? And I think that's very important when reviewing this device, that we need to remember just to put things into perspective, right? So it's an excellent smartphone. We've got this sort of marble texture. I don't know which version you've got. I've got this green one. Which
I've got the same one as well.
Looks a little bit like a tabletop, which is, but it's nice. It's different. It's interesting, right?
Yeah.
And you know, in terms of my impressions over using it, over the past few weeks, it's got a beautiful display. One thing that it's got that the S24 Ultra does not have is a partial peak of up to 4,500 nits, which is mad.
4,600 nits.
4,600.
Yeah.
Those 4,500. Anyway, close enough. 100 nits at that range. And it's also got a curved display. So if you didn't like the fact that the S24 Ultra does not have a curved display, guess what? The OnePlus 12 does have a curved display. Overall impressions, the cameras, you know, are the same as the OnePlus Open, right? So you're getting very good quality cameras. And you've got the 8 Gen 3. So in terms of performance, yes, it might not be right there when it comes to the S24 Ultra, when you look at benchmarks and things like that, but it's $500 less. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think I understand. I understand that viewpoint with the pricing, but I also look at it as the viewpoint that both of them are considered flagships by each manufacturer. But I have to give OnePlus props, though, because it's been a while. We've made fun of them over the years. I was personally annoyed with some of the stuff they've done in the past, and I'm glad to see them now bringing in some really serious competition with the device. I think one thing to add to the OnePlus is that, you know, you still get a charger in the box. You get a really fast charger in the box, a 100-watt charger. Mm-hmm. You also get 50 watts wireless charging as well, something that Samsung has now just officially just retired from, at least from my from my standpoint, when it comes to those kind of speeds and charging and things like that. So I think, you know, when, because I got the question a lot and I saw people's responses about, you know, which device will I pick? And one of the responses I got on the Samsung side was, I traded, when I did my trade-ins, I got my device for $800, a smartwatch and bigger storage. So for me, it's a win. And I'm getting a Galaxy device. And then on the other side, some people were talking about the charging and, you know, the fast charging, the fast wireless charging, and the fact that, you know, it's just a, you know, competition to Samsung. Not necessarily saying that it's better or worse. It's more like it's competition. And yes, the OnePlus does compete really well. I think it's a really solid device. I think moving forward, I would like to see OnePlus bringing something else to the device that is, that differentiates it a bit more. And I know a lot of people will talk about, I know people are going to start typing and going, but you've got faster charging. Here's the thing. As much as I didn't like the initial idea that Apple removed the charger from the box, in general, nowadays, it's fine. I think it's absolutely fine that we don't have a charger in the box. That's just extra waste. Mm. I still want OnePlus to keep its 100-watt charging because they've done that for several years now. So you picking up a charger or you buying like an anchor charger or something, you know, that has multiple ports, that's not a problem. But I need to see something else on the device, because if you want to do the comparison, I can mention the S Pen and then the AI features. Granted, some people will say it's coming to other devices, but hey, we don't know yet.
This is the thing. I think one of the things that, you know, made the S24 Ultra stand out was some of these features, which people were like, you know what? Okay, some of these are gimmicky maybe to them, but like some are like, you know what? I can see myself using that. And that's quite useful because they did feature pack it completely. And they've also said 7 generations of OS updates. And it's just like, wow, okay, fine, sign me up. Now, with the OnePlus, there weren't any of these, you know, bells and whistles, shall we call it, right? There weren't any of these AI features and things like that. But also, they're doing 4 years of OS updates, 5 years of security updates. Now, traditionally, let me just say, traditionally, that'd be like, oh, that's amazing. But now, when you've got Google and Samsung promising 7 years, it's like, oh, actually, that's 4 years of, you know, OS updates doesn't sound as good. So this is where I think, you know, some of these things where Samsung kind of really kind of shines on, you know, the OnePlus maybe doesn't get there, but I still think it's a really good option. I mean, it's got a 5,400 milliamp hour battery. That's a big, big battery, right? So not only do you have a big battery, bigger battery, it's going to charge faster because you've got the charger that's included out of the box, right? And this is where I think, you know, OnePlus, and again, like cameras, usually you'd say that, you know what, OnePlus cameras are not that good. The OnePlus 12 and the OnePlus Open have excellent cameras. They're very, very good cameras.
Yeah. No, I think they've come up with a very good package this year. I'm really impressed with what OnePlus has done. So, I mean, as a fan of the brand and as a fan of like just competition, especially, it's good to see OnePlus like, you know, get rejuvenated and like, you know, come back up. But again, you know, when you're in this space where you're competing against Samsung, your biggest competition is Samsung. The value proposition of price is great. The extra features that you need to add to that is something that I would love to see more. So that there's a difference. And if you can bring those features with a value proposition as well, then it kind of negates, you know, a lot of things that where you're going, okay, yes, I may not have an S Pen, but Samsung, do you have this?
Now, I get the comparison of flagship versus flagship, but I think, once again, you have to remember that the OnePlus 12 should be compared to the S24, not the S24 Ultra, because of its price. That's what it's priced at, right? And I know psychologically we make that comparison of flagship versus flagship, but I think that's something that a lot of people do have to remember, because this one should be compared to the S24, not the S24 Ultra. And OnePlus is actually offering some great deals on the OnePlus 12. We've got, you get double the storage. So for $799, you're going to be getting the 512 gigabytes of storage, plus you get some free earphones in the UK. $899 for the 512 gigabyte version. Again, you get some free OnePlus earphones as well. I think it's a great deal. OnePlus 12. I, again, can also recommend this phone. It's, you know, I can recommend the S24 Ultra, but if you don't have $1,300 or £1,250 and you want to get something that's going to be great for around the $800 or £850 mark, OnePlus 12. Apple Vision Pro. The $3,500 VR AR headset from Apple. And Enobonk has pre-ordered it. He's doing well for himself, it seems so.
Yeah. I pre-ordered the device. I am going to be dropping videos on it, and it's going to be quite interesting.
So it's only available in the US, which is why I haven't been able to order it or anything like that. And there's a few things, right? So firstly, let's just go on to the fact that there aren't going to be many apps available because Netflix has said that they're not going to be supporting an app. YouTube has also said the same. I think we've got Disney that will have apps on the Vision Pro. But yeah, I mean, if you want to watch YouTube videos, then you're going to have to go through the Safari browser. So
yeah, it's quite interesting. The app support is much lower than I expected. I expected to see, at least from the major, you know, manufacturers. So I think at least at the very best, they're treating it as a developer device and not as a consumer device. I have to wait and see what those apps will be on the Vision Pro. Will I be using the browser? Will I be using Apple services and things like that? You know, what's that going to be like? And if Apple is really pushing more that I record content with
spatial video,
spatial video, yeah, stuff like that. So it would be interesting to see that because my own, I have a bunch of videos lined up for this. But one I think a lot of people will be interested in is comparing it to the $500 Meta Quest.
Yeah, which is pretty decent, right? So
it's more than decent. It's really good.
Yeah. So this is the thing, and it's like a seventh of the price. So when you kind of look at that and you put it into context, because here's the thing. So like you mentioned spatial video, right? Now, one of the things that I mentioned after I tried it on for the first time was that when they had those videos of the guy with, you know, the Vision Pro on his face, and then he's recording the video of his kid's birthday party. And I'm like, I have nieces and nephews. If I had something like that on my face and I was trying to record that, they wouldn't be looking at the cake. They'd be like, what have you got on your face? Or they'll be trying to like, let me have it or something like that. That is not going to be a natural reaction. And that's what I was saying, that I can't imagine going around trying to capture memories with that on my face. So I'm glad that, you know, Apple did kind of take the feedback of, you know, everybody on board and like brought it onto the iPhone. And I think that's what they were planning to do eventually as well, that you can capture stuff with spatial video on your iPhone, and then you can view it back, you know, in 3D, which looks amazing when you do have it on, right? So that's the first thing. But then the other thing that I've been seeing, because we both got to try it on after the launch right away, a few others like, you know, Justine, Marquez, a few others have been able to go and try it on further. And one of the things that I'm hearing from a lot of people is that it is heavy.
I mean, okay, look, my first use when we tried it on at DubDub, it didn't feel heavy to me. But again, I was excited. It was my first time using it. So, you know, all those come into play. And I've used it for about an hour. Now, I do understand that. And I think, you know, this is a point of building with premium materials, you know, metals and things like that. When on your head, you want it as light as possible, you know. Because one thing that I realized with that is I've seen videos of people going to this guy does a video on TikTok where he says, I'm using my Meta Quest in places where you will never use it, or just so you know how it feels. So he goes to the gym with it. Yeah. He's doing pull-ups, you know, he's doing bench press and stuff like that. And a lot of people ask the question, it's like, isn't that heavy? He's like, no, it's pretty light. You can see I can walk around with it and, you know, it's easy for me to use. That's the key thing for those kind of headsets, especially just on a day-to-day. So it will be interesting. I'll let you guys know, because that whole weekend I'm going to be using it extensively. And if you see me with my neck tilted to one side in my video,
then you know. But here's the thing. So, okay, here's a question. So when you had your demo, did they have just the strap that goes around the back, or did they also have a strap for you that goes around the over your head like headphones do?
So it was just the one around the back, if I remember correctly. I would say I did feel the weight. That was the one thing I did mention. I did feel the weight. It wasn't heavy at the time, but I can see that if I'm going to be using it for 2 hours, I have to lay down on the couch.
Yeah.
And just kind of like, you know, stay
there. So what's interesting is, because you got to see it before me, right? And yeah. I got to test it out the day after. Now, when I tried it on the day after, they had an additional strap that, and this is something that I talked about in my reactions, they had an additional strap that went over your head, right? And in all of the marketing videos and stuff, there was probably only one clip where they had somebody with that strap over the head, right? And I think what must have happened is from the feedback of the initial hands-on, people have been like, oh, it feels a bit heavy. So they were like, okay, let's get that other strap that they do have that comes with the pack to be able to distribute the weight a little bit better, right? Now, yeah. For me, I'm like, that messes my hair up. Like, even right now, I don't like wearing these headphones. I just, you know, it just flattens my, or any volume in my head just flattens it out, right? Okay. Like with the Meta Quest, it's even worse because it goes over the top. But with headsets like that, you need something that's going to distribute the weight. So from what I'm seeing right now is that there will be another separate strap that should help even that weight a little bit better than just having it around the back, which looks way cooler and looks great for marketing, but when it comes to practicality, is not as practical. You do need that weight distribution, and the only way you're really going to be able to do that is over your head.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, to me, that's just standard. It's physics. You know, you can't have something in front and then disrupt at the back. It just makes sense.
Now, one thing I do want to kind of clarify is that this is a first-gen product, and like I think with all, you know, mixed reality headsets, they are going to get smaller and better. Like right now, we've got the Ray-Bans, which, you know, are like your glasses, and that's kind of the way we want to reach, right? So there's going to be a process of a few years where we're going to have these headsets that are not as comfortable. They are a little bit heavy, right? Now, speaking of the battery, there's a wire that goes down, and it's a battery pack, which will last up to 2 hours. And then what you can do is, even if you want to plug in, it needs to go through this battery, right? Now, my thinking was, initially when I saw it, I thought, okay, it's an external battery, brilliant. That takes the weight off your head. It's in your pocket, okay? So that's the first thing, right? Now, my thinking was that, okay, this is brilliant because I could buy multiple batteries, and then what I could do essentially is just unplug and then, you know, put in a fresh battery. So say I'm watching a Bollywood film, right? Which is 3 hours long, right? Yeah, 2 hours, my battery's dead. I don't have power. But then guess what? I just unplug, pop in a fresh battery, and then I can start going again, right? That's the way I thought it was going to be, but it's not like that, which is kind of annoying.
There's no power reserve in the headset itself for you to do that. You can't hot swap.
Yeah, but this is the thing that would have made sense, and maybe they'll do that for the, you know, generations going forward. And maybe, I don't know, if they wanted to kind of prevent third parties from making batteries for the Apple Vision Pro, maybe that kind of restricts it in that way. But to me, that doesn't make any sense. Like having just 2 hours, like a movie, okay, you know, a standard Hollywood movie, hour and a half. But
I mean, they could easily do it with a proprietary connector on the other side, you know, that connects to the headset. But I don't know why. But I hear you. I think it's a very valid concern. But then again, this is a developer device. They said that. So
that's true. So I mean, it's early stages. Let's see how it goes.
So we can't fault them for that in that regard. I would like to see how fast we get apps from developers once the headset hits. Is it something that in the next 3 months I'm going to see it populated with tons of apps that I can actually access and use? And I'd also like to see creators who, if they can edit videos there, you know, like how does that environment feel? Because, you know, you can make a giant, you know, 120-inch screen and then have a physical mouse and keyboard, you know. And
I think you would need a physical mouse and keyboard because, you know, when you've got the virtual keyboards and stuff like that, I think it's just not going to be the same. If you connect a Bluetooth mouse and keyboard, then boom, I think that would be brilliant because then, you could have like a, you know, however large screen, your timeline could be spread across because you can get your Mac. That's something that I definitely want to see when you kind of link it to your Mac and get a big screen. That's going to be quite interesting.
But I'm excited to check it out. I'm also crying at the same time at the price. That's all I can say. So please watch the videos, guys. Watch as much as possible, multiple times.
Business expense. Just keep watch through all of the ads to give as much as possible ad revenue as possible to kind of make up that. But I mean, nevertheless, it's interesting, and I'll be, you know, I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts. Obviously, it's not available in the UK as yet, so I can't actually do my review on it. But excited nevertheless. Finally, YouTubers are quitting. Well, quite a few prominent YouTubers have now either cut back or just stopped making videos altogether. I think the one that, you know, for me was quite emotional, actually, was Tom Scott. Tom's a friend, and he's got a series on his YouTube channel which has been going on for 10 years. Every Monday 4 p.m. UK time, he would upload a video, and he has been going strong for 10 years. And early Jan, he said that this was the last of his videos, and he will occasionally be making YouTube videos now and then, but he's not going to be continuing this consistency that he's been, the pressure that he's been putting on himself for that time, right? And then a few others, have also announced that. And then Marquez did a really good summary, I would say, about this whole situation. And I think being YouTubers, I've been doing YouTube for over 12 years now. And Abong, how many years has it been for yourself?
Oh, God. Since 2009.
Yeah. So a very long time, right? So, yeah. We can kind of relate because, one thing that I want to kind of clarify and say straight up is that being a YouTuber is a dream job, right? Let's not sugarcoat it. We get to do things that, many of the people don't get to do. We get to test out technology and lots of devices that a lot of people don't get to do either. And, it's a job that a lot of people want to do. Like kids these days, if you ask them, what do you want to do when you grow up? It's like, I want to be a YouTuber, right? Now, I think Tom, when he did summarize it in his video, he said, being a YouTuber is a dream job, but it's still a job, right? And with a job, there come certain things which you like doing, and there's certain things that, you don't like doing. So you see a certain picture from the outside when you look at us, right? And then it's what we actually do behind the scenes, which a lot of people don't get to see. And that's not us complaining. Let me just put that out there. We're very grateful, right? I always say, Alhamdulillah, which is praise be to God, because I'm very, very grateful for what we have and what we are able to do. But at the same time, it is the best job that I've ever had. I've had a lot of jobs. I've worked in call centers, supermarkets, been a web designer, been a videographer, been a wedding photographer. It's definitely the best job that I've had. But having said that, it's also the most demanding, most high pressured, and most difficult job as well. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with some of it. Not all, but I agree with some.
Okay.
I think, one of the things that probably doesn't come out with all the different YouTubers who have, quit or scaled back in whatever fashion, that people don't understand is that YouTube is not forgiving. And that's the part that nobody gets to understand. Yeah, just to add to what you stated about how it's demanding and, there are different things about the job, is the fact that, for Tom, for instance, if he didn't continue uploading every Monday, the recognition of that video series and his channel might not be there. Mm-hmm. And if you decide to take a break, I know YouTubers who've taken a break for, life reasons, work reasons, even just military service, and it's hard for their channels to come back because the YouTube is not forgiving. It doesn't say, hey, take a load off, relax for a little bit. I'm taking a sabbatical. I've got a 3-month vacation. I'm traveling with my family. You still got to upload content, right?
Yep. No, 100%.
If you don't do that, it doesn't add, it doesn't help your cause. And then it becomes really difficult because, like Tom said, you go for 10 years and you're like, man, I can't miss every Monday. So even if I travel somewhere, I have to plan I can't travel on a Monday.
Your life is YouTube, basically, because everything you have to do has to be planned around YouTube. And it's interesting about mentioning the break because, whenever I'm kind of just having conversations, just having conversations with friends, and they're like, oh, why don't you just like maybe take some time off? And it's just like, no, that's not how YouTube works. And I want to kind of mention something that Rene Ritchie, our friend, kind of mentioned, who works for YouTube now, he's got his YouTube channel as well. And I think he summarized it very nicely, right? That it's not just the YouTube algorithm, right? So a lot of people kind of say, blame YouTube, that YouTube's unforgiving and you can't take a break, right? But it's also the psychology of viewers, right? Now, the analogy that Rene gave was, I think, just really hit the nail on the head, right? He kind of gave the analogy of a cafe. So say you've got a cafe that you go to every day, you're regular, maybe you go there every week, right? That's your point. You go there, you love the coffee there, you love the atmosphere, you see all of your friends there, et cetera, right? Now, say that place closes for a few months or for a year, okay? You're still going to go to a cafe. You still need to get your coffee. You still need to, you know, catch up with your friends. So guess what you're going to do? You're going to go to another one. And then slowly but surely, that's going to become your regular, right?
Yeah.
Now, when your original cafe reopens, you might go back there a few times, but guess what? It's not going to be exactly the same because now you found something else and you've kind of lost that connection that you had initially. And it's the same way as it works as a YouTuber. If you take a long break, right, more than a few weeks, then, you know, viewers, naturally, it's not their fault, they'll start watching other content, they'll start, you know, following other YouTubers, and it won't have the same impact that it would have had you just carried on. And that's something that I think a lot of people don't realize.
Yeah, no, I believe that's true. But this is where I blame YouTube. I have to. I'm sorry. I love you, Renee. It's the fact that there is no mechanism in YouTube that almost re-engages. You know, you take a break, Saf, for 2 months, and then you come back. I guarantee you, I who watch your videos constantly will not get that notification for a couple of days that you dropped a video. And there's
but it's
also engage.
Again, I'm just balancing it here. I'm not saying like it's your fault, but because that person, that viewer, say for example, I'm watching your videos, but then I've started watching many other videos now as well, right? So I'm getting those notifications. So now you coming back notification is kind of, you know, filtered and just like in this pool of other content creators that I'm now that I've now seeked because I was missing you.
No, to be fair, and I think it kind of bolsters the fact that there's no, what I mean by mechanism, I'm not saying just the algorithm. It's almost like an announcement saying like, hey, yo, Saf is back. Saf said he was taking a break and Saf is back. And the algorithm knows the people who are watching you constantly anyway. Right at that point where you stopped, it knows. So if if something goes out and says, hey, Saf is back, videos coming in on Tuesday or whatever, right, then that's okay, all right, cool, you know, that would help the process. I'm not saying it'd be better
potentially,
definitely help the process,
but it's also like the other thing is because a lot of people say like, oh, why don't you just like, you know, prepare some content so when you're away you've got stuff to upload. It's just like, okay, so you're asking me to up my production workload by 200% for these couple of months, completely burn myself out, so then I've got content to upload when I'm actually taking a break, when I finally get to take a break, because we're at capacity already, right? And I'm it doesn't work like that because
we do that already. It's not
exactly
like we do it anytime we travel for an event.
Yeah.
Especially if we're going for, you know, like we go to Hawaii or something like that. If we're not making content at that event, then it's like, I got to drop a video at least here somewhere. Or else people will be like, what happened to you? You might miss 1 week or two and then you're like, yo, what happened to this guy? I haven't seen you in a minute.
Yeah. You see it. People will come up. And plus the other thing for us as well is what we cover is seasonal. So like, for instance, right now, we don't determine our schedule. The manufacturers who release devices determine the schedule, right? So, for instance, right now, over the past few weeks, we've had an endless amount of devices that have come out. And obviously, we can't cover them all. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of people have been asking me, why haven't you done a full review of the OnePlus 12? And it's like, I got to be honest, the S24 Ultra landed beforehand, and that's the one that was my priority. So then I didn't actually get a chance to do a full video on the OnePlus 12, you know. One might be coming later on, but it's also the timing because, you know, there's certain YouTubers who do have that luxury where they can upload a video anytime and it's going to pop, right? But for most of us, right, you have to be there on on time, because if you're not there on time, your viewership is going to not only half, but I would say you'd probably get a quarter, if not less, for that same video, that exact same video, which you spent the same amount of effort in, the same, you know, production and everything, but it just doesn't get the same reach as it would have done if the topic is trending at that time.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think it kind of just boils down to the fact that there's a lot of strain constantly, you know, producing. I think this is the first time, you know, as regular people, we're experiencing what celebrities go through, you know, the constant, always being on stage, always being active for the audience. You know, we do that on a daily basis. And remember, guys, it's especially now as being a YouTuber, it's not just YouTube anymore. We haven't talked about Instagram, TikTok, right? YouTube Shorts.
Yeah.
And then stories. You know, and people, you know, my wife, for instance, you know, has her fashion brand. And she's like, you know, she's making content now for it. She has somebody who helps her make content. She's like, this is a lot of work. I was like, yeah, babe. Yeah, now you know.
Yep. You know, and it's so interesting because it appears one way from the outside. But then when you actually see it, and again, this is not me complaining in any way. We love our jobs and, you know, we're very grateful for it. I want to keep emphasizing that because people will just be watching and say, look at these guys, just their privileged positions, just complaining. It's not us complaining. This is just having a discussion of why a lot of people have these challenges. Now, another thing a lot of people say is that, okay, then why don't you get a big team? Why don't you get all of this team? And then, you know, I think Marquez has a really good analogy of, and you know, the octopus analogy, which we discussed here on this podcast. You can check out the episode with Marquez, which was posted like a couple of years ago. He discusses how you have different arms and you can kind of, you know, cut off those arms, like an editor, you know, maybe somebody who does thumbnails, maybe who's better than you in these areas, right? Now, that's all well and good, but it's not as straightforward as it may sound on the outside, okay? And some people are really good at doing this, you know, let's few examples. Linus is really good at doing this. He's got a massive team now. We've got Mr. Beast, who's got a huge team, and he's really good at delegating and things like that, right? But that in itself is a skill, right? Okay. And you still have to fundamentally manage everybody. I commented on Marquez's video that, you know, one of the reasons why I haven't expanded massively is because, you know, Tom mentioned this in his video as well. Tom Scott mentioned this in his video that he could go one of two routes. He could either stop doing what he's doing and then, you know, kind of take a step back, or hire a team to do different things. And then he goes, then I'd become a manager and I'm a terrible manager and I'd hate every second of it, right? And that's kind of how I feel. Being somebody who's a creative, obviously I like getting involved and stuff like that. And then somebody kind of said that, you know, in the comments that, oh, you could just get a general manager. And it's just like, yeah, but who's going to manage the general manager? It's still going to be you fundamentally, right? So you're kind of in a dilemma where it's just like, okay, yes, you could try to get more and more people, which a lot of these, you know, YouTubers do. And some of them are very successful in doing because they're very good at that. Or you could just cut back. And I think one of the things I've personally done is I've cut back. So I'm not uploading as much content as I would have been doing maybe a few years ago, right? So it's not great. I'm not great at balancing my own time. And, you know, on the main channel, I still do all my editing myself, right? And it's crazy sometimes where I'm just like, I don't see anybody yet. Just kind of get down to it. I work, and you know, it's not an easy job, but nothing worth having in life comes easy, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, I mean, that kind of sums it up. I'm great, not great, but I like delegation of duty. That's me, because I know my strengths. I know what I'm good at, and I know what I'm not good at. But even still, with that too, I think it kind of boils to mind of how most creators don't understand also how to grow. Because it's not an easy thing. Not everybody has the same skill sets, you know. I mean, I'm not a great editor. That's why I have an editor. You know, I don't do my own thumbnails because I'm terrible at it. Staff will tell you that, you know. So
gladly.
it's one of the, but also again, it also means that how much can you grow? You know, how much of that team do you have to manage? And the one thing that I think people don't realize when, you know, like mentioning Tom's video saying you should get a general manager, or, you know, you should expand the team, is that switching between left and right brain, AKA doing business things and then going back to creative, is not an easy task. Doesn't matter what job, what career it is, because you're doing completely two different things. You're doing an organizational structure. On the other hand, you have to come back and go like, okay, let's do something fun in this video.
yeah, exactly. It's a switchover that, you know, it's not easy to do. There are so many different aspects to it, right? And you know how you were saying that you like to delegate, right? But even yourself, okay, you like to delegate, right? But
yeah,
like you're always busy, right? There's just, it's
yeah,
just
I'm,
non-stop.
Yeah, I'm still busy.
Yeah, you still got like you're talking about delegation, but sometimes the delegation actually creates more work because you're like, okay, now I've got more capacity, and then more stuff is coming in, and then you're saying no to less than what you would have been doing. And it's just like one of those cycles, right? Now, again, having work is a very good problem to have. We're not kind of, you know, putting that down in any way. But I guess what I'm trying to kind of say is that, you know, a lot of people who do want to become YouTubers, you do have to kind of keep all of this in mind, because another analogy that I think was really good that Marquez gave was that, you know, he kind of compared creatives to sports people, right? That if you love playing football in the park and you go there and you're like, oh, I love doing this, that's great as a hobby, right? As soon as it becomes a job where you now need to train for it and everything, and you may never make it, right? You may never become a successful sports person. In the same way, you may never, like, for example, when we do videos, there's some videos which you're like, you got a good feeling that it's going to work, but the amount of times we put in time, effort, and money into a video, and it just doesn't do well. And it's just like completely out of our control. We're like, okay, so I spent like 3 weeks on this video. It cost us this much to do this, this, and this. And we've barely made 10% back of it, right?
Yeah, Apple Vision Pro, guys, please watch.
That's what it comes down to. And I think that's something, it's so important to remember that, look, if you're happy to just do it, and this is how we started, right? We didn't do it for money. I don't know about you, E, but like, you know, when we started YouTube, it was just something that we liked doing. And it was maybe like a good 5-6 years into our journey before we actually started making any, you know, money that was like, okay, now, okay, this is fine. I can potentially quit my full-time job while I'm, because, you know, this is working for me, right? But for a large chunk of it, it was just working essentially for free because you like what you're doing and you're building something over time. But again, that thing takes a lot of time.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. I think everyone just has to be mindful that, it, like you said, it is a job. Marquez's analogy is great. If you're into sports, you know, it's a very difficult task. And people will say, hey, you know what? But LeBron, like, you're playing basketball, but, you know, you still have to put in the work. You still have to do a lot of things in there. And sometimes you might need a break. And, you know, if you take a break too long, people go, oh, what happened to him? So, yeah, I feel those guys. But I still will be here, guys. Saf will be here. Don't worry. I make sure Saf doesn't go anywhere. He's going to be
he'll be there making sure I go push out content. But I guess we're trying to say is that, you know, this is something that we're still learning as well. You know, there isn't a blueprint of this is how to be a YouTuber, and this is something Marquez mentioned as well, and this is what I tell everybody, right? There's lots of careers where, you know, hundreds of thousands of people have already done this, right? So they kind of know what and how to do things, right? Because they've got everybody else's experience to work from. With YouTube and like being a content creator, it's still very new, right? It's not something that's, you know, we've kind of like know exactly what to do. And because there are so many differences as well, a YouTuber is not just a YouTuber. You've got a tech YouTuber. You've got all different types of YouTubers, right? And everything works very differently. So for some people, for instance, like right now we were talking about delegating. Now, one thing you can't necessarily delegate is actually reviewing the device, because people are coming here for your opinion, right? So you can't just be like, all right, here's a phone, use it for 2 weeks and let me know and then give me the notes. It's just like, but then that's not your authentic opinion. That's what people have come for. So you actually have to go out and do these tests yourself, right? And although you can get certain help in certain things, it's not that easy to delegate. And, you know, it's not your standard job where you can be like, all right, I'm going to take a month off and I'll be back. You know, I knew a guy at my old workplace. He used to save up his annual leave, right? And then December, he used to take the whole month off, right? Okay. And then he's just game. That whole month is just a game. And I was like, that sounds really cool. Like, to save up all your leave and just take a whole month off, right? Unfortunately, that doesn't necessarily work on YouTube.
No, it doesn't. I do, you know, that idea of delegating somebody to cover the device for you. I'm joking.
Pretty soon, everyone's just going to be reading a script and he's just going to be like, he's going to say all of this stuff about a device and it's just going to be completely off.
I'll sound like this. The Galaxy S25 Ultra is really good. And so it has a very good battery.
You know how we were talking about AI taking over content creators? This is how you do that and how you make that process easier.
Physical AI?
Oh, man. But anyway, you know, wish Tom all the best, and you know, I would hopefully bring him on the podcast at some point as well, now that he's, you know, got a little bit more time, because the last time he came to Leicester, we were doing a game show a few years ago, but yeah, maybe we can just have him on the podcast and just have a bit of a chat.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
All right, guys, that's all for this episode of Superstar Speaks. Hope you guys have enjoyed it. As always, if you're watching on YouTube, please do subscribe and, you know, drop a comment, drop a like. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or others, then do leave a rating. It helps the podcast reach different audiences and get recommended more as well. And we'll see you in March now. We'll have just gone past MWC, so it should be quite interesting.
Ooh. Yes, yeah. It should be.
All right, guys. This is Saf on Superstar Speaks with my co-host
Thunder E from Board at Work.
And we'll see you next time.